Hey, CS Psychos, Rachel Provan here, and today we're going to be talking about the psychology of onboarding. The way most people do it is not very effective, and it's one of the most important parts of the customer lifecycle because it's like a first date. So we're going to jump into that, plus how you can set up your initial framework so that you can actually get started with it, and then how to improve it from there into something that is much more likely to lead to adoption. That's all coming up next, right here on Psychology of Customer Success. Stay tuned.
Humans don't think or behave like computers. You can't just run a command and get them to do what you want them to do. So why are you still basing your CS strategy based solely on logic? I'm Rachel Provan, CS leadership coach, award-winning CS strategist, and certified psych nerd. I teach CS leaders how to build and scale world-class CS departments using a combination of strategy, leadership, and mindset, using my secret weapon, psychology. Come join me every Wednesday for Psychology of Customer Success, where we'll dive into why people do the things they do, what motivates them, and the effect that has on your CS strategy, team dynamics, and executive presence. Make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and make sure to share it with your CS bestie. Talk soon, and here's to your success.
Welcome back. So, onboarding. If there's one thing that we treat more like a computer process than dealing with actual human beings, it's onboarding. Because the way onboarding works for most softwares is sales makes the sale. Maybe there's a sales CS handoff if we're lucky. Then implementation, the technical people hook everything up, followed by a kickoff call and then some training. And then, yeah, they should adopt, right? We hooked it up. We showed them how to use it. What's the problem? And the problem is a lot of it. So first of all, when CS is responsible for onboarding, which it often is in an earlier stage startup, once you have a more mature organization, you can split off onboarding and that can be a lot more efficient. But initially, there's going to be a lot of companies where that just doesn't make sense yet. But the fact is, if CS is handling onboarding, it's often the heaviest lift in the customer lifecycle. For most traditional CS departments, onboarding's the thing that takes up the most time, especially if the CSMs are doing live training, whether that's live in person or just a personalized training to a company that's done live, as opposed to a webinar or training you can send them. So with something that takes up that many hours, you know, and if a CSM has two or three trainings a week, those things tend to be, they're an hour, but there also is some prep for them. And talking for pretty much an hour straight and teaching and being on is really exhausting. It's hard to have a really productive day after that. It's very draining. And doing that more than once in one day is definitely not advisable. So the issue is, with the way it's currently set up, the implementation, kickoff, training, now they're on board, it's not terribly effective because onboarding, the way most people do it, does not lead to adoption. It's checking a few boxes on our side, but it doesn't help the customer feel ready to really take on the software and make a change. And look, this is slightly different with tools where you have a technical implementation. And it's a very technical tool, and it's just going to be running in the background doing its thing, like a snowflake or something. That is different than if you have a tool which is not just crunching data, where humans are involved in using the product. You're going to have end users. That, or if your product is what you might consider a nice to have, as opposed to a must have. Now, it might feel like a must have for us, because we must have them keep renewing it. But in all honesty, if it doesn't tie to their revenue in some way, it's going to be a nice to have. One of the most important things we can do is help people see the invisible consequences of not having it. We've got to turn that nice to have into a must have by showing people the benefits that they're taking for granted or the invisible consequences that will come into play if they don't have it. And this is a part of sales that many CSMs are never taught. Churn doesn't happen at renewal. Most of the time, it starts during onboarding. that sense of, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, that sense of disappointment. Typically, when someone buys a software, just like when you buy anything else new that you feel like is going to be a game changer, it's so exciting, and then you get it and it doesn't immediately change everything about your life, there's going to be a little bit of disappointment there. And if you couple that with taking a long time to get value out of it and not really understanding what you're watching, you're going to get rid of it. Churn doesn't happen at renewal. They don't wait till the day their contract expires and say, oh, you know what? I just realized I don't need it. Churn most often starts during implementation. It's that first impression of us once they're actually out of the sales process and into, okay, now I'm working with the company. The reality is it's not going to be fireworks and life-changing immediately the way people would want it to be. So there is typically a little bit of a letdown and then a curve which comes back up as they, you know, get implemented and start to use the product and start to see progress. But that's not guaranteed. So there are a number of problems with traditional onboarding. And those are long implementation times, one-size-fits-all training, only doing a single training, and cramming too much info in there. And finally, the assumption that once you've done those trainings, that they're now on board and ready to adopt. Just because you've finished your checklist doesn't make them on board. So a lot of people don't understand the difference between implementation and onboarding. And to me, it's always been like the implementation is the technical fiddly bits, hooking up APIs and things. And onboarding is getting everybody up to speed. This is how you use it, getting it into part of their day. And Jeff Kushmerick, who is an excellent resource when it comes to all things implementation, he gave a presentation a few weeks ago at a Churn Zero event, and he boiled it down so perfectly. He said, you implement software, you onboard people. In CS, you're probably not going to be doing the implementation unless it's a seriously simple tool, but you are responsible for the onboarding. And it is more of a tricky thing because it's not math, it's humans. It's getting buy-in, it's influence. So the first one, people lose motivation with a long implementation. What really happens here is that you want to take advantage of that initial excitement. And when an implementation takes 3, 4, 6 months, which I've heard of, at that point, people move on. They say, we haven't put this thing in place. The world hasn't come crashing down. I guess we don't really need it. And other priorities are going to sneak up during that time that is just going to completely put your product very low on their priority list. And if it's not at the top, it's not getting done. We all have too much to do. So another problem is looking at it as one size fits all. Unless absolutely everyone is going to be using your product in the exact same way for the exact same reason, you should not be having the exact same training for everyone. If you are not being specific and speaking to the outcome the customer wants, not what's going to happen in your product, but what's going to happen in their business, it's snoozeville. They're not interested. They're not going to be engaged. And one of the problems with the one size fits all, not only does it not engage your customers, but it's also incredibly overwhelming because what a lot of these trainings do is show the customer how to use every bit of the platform, every bell whistle, look at all the cool things we can do. Yes, it's cool, but no one's going to be able to remember all of that. You've done it 1,000 times in these trainings, so you know it. But just word vomiting onto people, hey, here are all our features, here's all the cool stuff it can do, is not going to help them onboard. It's going to leave them confused and overwhelmed. That's why the best course of action with training is to train the customer solely in the features that they're going to need to use in order to achieve their goals with the product. Only show them the parts they need in the steps in order. Get that first. That's not to say you won't show them the value of the product later. And you can even say, it can do a lot more things. It's incredibly powerful. But we're going to stick today. We're going to stick to exactly what you're going to need to do to get to that goal that we've discussed. Now, learning, the way humans learn, is a big part of what is wrong with onboarding and training in customer success. Because, again, we do it once. It's a long training with a lot of information, and people are passively consuming it. Probably the worst way to teach people at all, like ever. The reason for this is our brain processes, on average, 7.4 billion bits of information per day. Now, that's a lot. If you had to consciously think about all of that, process it, remember it, you'd go absolutely crazy. Your brain puts most of it on autopilot, things that it is familiar with, things that it knows. It's going to say, yep, know what that is. We can immediately forget that because it's not relevant to what we're doing right now. That tree that I saw 10 feet back, it has nothing to do with my day today. Yes, I saw it. I didn't bump into it. And now it's out of my memory. Until next time, I have to not bump into it. That may seem far off from a training, but the second your brain, with all this information that's flying at it throughout the day, the second your brain looks at something and says, that's not relevant to me, that's not crucial information right now, it's out the window. And it is incredibly hard to get that attention back once the brain has disregarded it. And the opposite of this, because it can be hard to know how we experience this. I've talked before about how I asked my son what color the door was three doors back. We walked right past it. You know, you definitely saw it, but your brain immediately forgot it. And it drove him nuts that he could not remember. He's like, I know I saw it. Yes, it wasn't important. So your brain immediately deletes. It will delete and automate everything it can in order to be efficient, to keep you alive. The opposite of this sort of forgetting principle is called the Bader-Meinhof phenomenon. And that's where if something is really relevant to you, you start to notice it everywhere, where maybe you didn't before. Now, this is a classic example of this is if you get a new car, you're like, this is cool. We got a new car a couple of years ago, and I really like the color. I was like, it's a little different. I like this blue. I don't see it everywhere. It's pretty. It's a gray blue. It's very calming. I like it. And then, of course, from that moment on, it was like everyone on our block had that color car, to the point where I'm constantly walking up to the wrong car to get into it. It is that common. I did not notice any of them before because it wasn't relevant to me. But a car is a big part of your life. You have to know what it looks like so that, unlike me, you can get into the correct vehicle. And I'm not riding the car that much because I'm in New York City, but your brain's like, no, this is something important. Pay attention. So you will start to see that everywhere once something has been identified as important. We want that to happen with our product. We want people to notice situations where they can use it or situations where it's going to benefit their career. That is not going to happen if we're just giving a generic onboarding that isn't customized to what that type of individual is trying to achieve. I would say there should be a different type of onboarding for people who are end users versus those who are just going to be overseeing things. The people who have to make sure they're monitoring the data and seeing the results that we're getting, say like on a marketing platform or something, they have to check the open rates and they have to check the click-through rates versus people who are just writing emails into the system. Those two groups will need different trainings. It doesn't make sense to train both those groups in both those things because you don't know which they're going to retain. More likely, the stuff that's relevant to them, but it really has to matter. You have to hook them in some emotional way. And I'm not talking about getting severely emotional, but it has to matter to them. There has to be a why. What do I have to do? Why do I have to do it? And only then can we get to how we do it. Within all of this, the other reason that a single training is really useless is something called the Ebbinghaus forgetting curve. Hermann Ebbinghaus was a scientist who was fascinated by how terrible our memory is. And he did a study in 1885. It still holds up today. They replicated it in 2015, still got the same results. And that is that we lose 50% of everything we learned within an hour. We lose 70% within 24 hours, and we lose 90% within a week. So a week later, they remember 10% of what you said. And even if they're trying to do it an hour later, they remember 50%. It's not enough. So I'm not saying you have to go there every day and be banging the information into their head, but you do have to understand that once is not enough. There's a principle in marketing called, what is it? It's like the marketing principle of seven or something, but it's that people have to be told about something seven times before they will actually take action on it. And it pretty much holds true. Anyone who's tried to market something for the first time feels, oh my God, I feel like I'm repeating myself all over the place. I'm being so salesy and being so annoying. And they ask someone, hey, is this too much? Am I doing too much? Am I talking about this thing too much? And 9 times out of 10, the person they ask will be like, I didn't know you were selling a thing. I had that happen a ton. And there's so much of marketing that applies to customer success only because it's about influencing people to take action, actions that will benefit them. So what are some ways that we can do a little better than making them lose 90% of it within a week? One of those things is spaced repetition. And let's be honest, there's probably not enough in it for them to be like, oh, I'm going to whip out some note cards and study this after a week. But you can have a webinar or a live training. And then 3 days later, you can send an email with a recap of the training. And then a week later, you can send a link to your knowledge center where they can find what I like to call 2-minute videos, where they can see that and documentation on how to do any one little thing. I'm going to have a separate podcast about the 2-minute videos because that's its own phenomenon. But I've loved those for years, but the time we can spend on them is getting shorter. So that's one way to have the spaced repetition. Additionally, people will retain information if there is emotion involved. It sticks better. One of the things that you can do is make it fun. I'm not suggesting you do a jump scare in the middle to try and get there to be some sort of emotion associated with it, but make training fun in some way. Just throw a few jokes in there, get people to interact, ask people questions, if it's something that's going to be automated, or a webinar that they watch, have something where they need to go in and put their hands on the product and actually practice. This works so much better actually involving the body in learning than just passively watching and listening. Now, a lot of times we think that live trainings are better because if we do that, we can be sure they're there, that they show up and that they learn. We can see if people did or didn't. And I used to feel this way. Oh, if I send someone a webinar, they're never going to watch it. Possibly. But the fact is, just because someone is at a virtual training does not mean they're learning the information, does not mean they're paying attention. There's every chance that they're answering emails or Slacking with their colleague. That's why the most important thing you can do in every step of customer success is to show people, this is why this matters to you. This is why it's important. Here's how it's going to make your life and your job better. Here's how it's going to help you get a raise or get home to your family faster. Things that motivate people. Is it going to get me back to my life or is it going to make me more money? And that's generally efficiency or revenue. And you can usually find some way to tie it to one of those things. If you forget to keep doing that constantly, it's just not going to be at the top of their list. And if it's not at the top, it's at the bottom. So finally, one of the other major mistakes I see people making is assuming the customer is quote unquote on board and now they're just supposed to go adopt. And sometimes people have set points at which they'll meet with the client. Hey, we'll meet up again in 2 weeks, see how you're doing. I think with a high touch client, that can be a great thing. It can be part of the success plan to have certain little milestones that they should be on track for. And if they're not, then you can come in and tweak and optimize and things like that. But most of the time, most people train them and assume they're adopting. And it's a dangerous assumption because your checklist being done does not mean they're ready. They're probably sitting there overwhelmed. And people do not like to admit that they don't remember, that they weren't listening. They assume everybody else remembers, and they're the dodo who can't understand this new software and they don't want to look dumb. This is why one of the key differentiators I look at in onboarding is that I don't consider onboarding done until they've seen an indication of first value. Now, that doesn't mean they have to have gotten a full result yet, but I like to ask in the kickoff call, of course, what are you trying to achieve? But then, okay, how will you know when things are moving in the right direction? What would be an early indicator of that? What numbers would you be looking at? That's when you know that you most likely have them on board. And that's going to be post what would traditionally be onboarding. It's not like they're going to immediately see value the day that you taught them how to use it. It can be something where typically a number starts going up that was flat or going down before, or vice versa, depending on what they're trying to achieve. So I'm going to give an example of a piece of software that I pay for monthly that I love, which is Descript. It's where I record a lot of things, where I do a lot of video and sound editing because they've made it really intuitive. So there's a lot that I do with it. It can do a lot more things than I'm doing now. It's completely overwhelming how much it can do. I'll get there. But I was able to get amazing online training in it. And before I had ever used it to create a full video, create a full podcast, when I was able to just delete three words in the text and then see that they were no longer in the video that I recorded and that it was seamless, boom, I was in. I knew that this was something that I was willing to keep paying for because I didn't have to go in there and just try and see how my mouth was moving and try to get the sound clips out that way. I could literally just delete text and have things cut out, or I could move around little bits of text and it would move the video. It was so much easier. But a small thing like that, I'm a ways away from being able to use it and have it seamlessly as a part of my routine and a tool that I use regularly, but I'm on board. I am ready to do what I need to do to incorporate that into my workflow because I immediately see, because with that one moment, I see how this is going to change my workflow for the better. So it can be something like that. It's not quite the same as an aha moment. It really has to be where it demonstrates the value that people are trying to get on a very small scale. So it's, if this is an app that helps you round off your money to the dollar and then puts it in a savings account, maybe my first value with that would be like, I've forgotten about it, but then after a week, I see that I have $25 in this account where I wasn't conscious that I saved anything. Is it enough to do much? Not really, but it's like a proof of concept. Okay, so I see how this is going to work. So that, to me, is what the true end of onboarding is. And yes, it might take you a little time and a few discussions to figure out what that should be for your customers, for your use cases. And when it's early on, you're going to have to figure those things out with your customers. It will become clear over time. The more conversations you have, the more you'll see, oh, this kind of people from this kind of company want that result. And they get that value. They see that it makes sense. And they really start to adopt at this point. This was what was important to them. Because typically, if they have an idea of what the outcome is, sometimes customers don't even know what they want the product for. But if they actually do know what the outcome they're looking for is, most often they can tell you what an early sign of success would be. And when that's happened, now they're willing to do some work on their own to pick that up and get it into their everyday life. So some final tips there. Do the kickoff call before implementation. Do that CS handoff and then have a kickoff call where you find out who the key players are, what they're trying to achieve, and then the implementation call can be after that. And then you can give regular updates as to where they are on the implementation because you've got skin in the game. Because the longer the implementation goes, the harder it's going to be to get them on board and listening to you. Kickoff call before implementation with regular updates. Only teach them what they need to know to complete their mission with the product. And hands-on exercises if possible. The other options there are get them to summarize it, write it down and summarize what they learned, or try and tell someone else about it who missed the meeting. that will actually ingrain it in the person's mind who attended the meeting and is trying to learn it. The other thing that I recommend is a knowledge center with 2-minute videos. Also, gamification. A lot of people like to talk about gamification. I don't know how effective it is. It really varies on the effectiveness. What I do like, because I don't care if I have 100 snoo bucks, that means nothing to me. Or I'm getting a badge that I'm a top contributor. I just don't care. But what is interesting to me is open loops. So you'll see things like checkboxes when you're doing self-onboarding. A lot of times that's because people do not like an unchecked box. It leaves an open loop in their brain, which feels uncomfortable. Shouldn't you be doing something about that? It's open. You should be doing something. So I am a fan of doing those checkboxes just to nudge people without having it to be you who's on their case. Now, I've referenced this in other podcasts, but I think it bears repeating because it's really helpful in understanding human behavior, is thinking of yourself as a CSM as like a personal trainer. Because just because the customer said that they wanted the product when they bought the product, that doesn't mean that they're going to automatically have the motivation and discipline across time to show up and do the work to get the result that they want. So you are that accountability buddy. You are that personal trainer that says, I know, I get that this is extra work right now, but you wanted this result. Do, give me 5 more, get those reps in, and you're going to get this result that you want. Merely the fact of just having accountability to someone will often make a big difference to people. And this doesn't necessarily need to be the case. I know this can't be the case with every account. Sometimes SMBs can't have a named CSM, but understand that in situations where you are a named CSM for the role, that's part of what you're there for. It's that influence, that accountability, that cheerleading, whatever it is that customer needs to influence them and move them along. And that's why I think that we will still have jobs despite AI, because there's something different about a person expecting you to do something than a computer being like, you still have this task. A computer can tell me like, oh, I'm supposed to go for a run today. But if I'm supposed to meet a friend, I'm going. If I see a notification on my computer, I'm most likely ignoring. So that's really all I have for you today on psychology of customer success. Thank you so much for joining. A little more practical today, but I still did nerd out on psychology. So I hope that was useful to you. I hope that you understand how we learn a little bit better, why it can be so challenging to get customers to adopt from the onboarding stage, and some things you can do to make yours a little bit more effective. So this is just the tip of the iceberg of the kind of things that we teach in CS Leadership Academy. It's all very practical, science-backed, human-focused customer success. And we go even deeper and we apply this to customer success strategy, like we did in a very small way today, team leadership, cross-functional communication, and executive presence. That is of interest to you, make sure you get on the waitlist at provansuccess.com/CSLA. Until next time, take care of yourself, get some rest, and be sure to share this with your CS bestie. Talk soon, and here's to your success.